Chapter 29. Sean looked across the boardroom table at Duff, seeking his support. Duff blew a thick ring of cigar smoke. It spun and expanded like a ripple in a pond before it hit the tabletop and disintegrated. Duff wasn't going to back him up, Sean realized bitterly. They had argued half the previous night. He had hoped that Duff might still change his mind. Now he knew he wouldn't. He made one last appeal. "They've asked for a 10% wage increase. I believe they need it. Prices have soared in this town, but wages have remained the same. These men have wives and children, gentlemen. Can't we take that into account?" Duff blew another smoke ring, and Hradsky pulled his watch from his pocket and looked at it pointedly. Max coughed and interrupted.
"I think we've been over that before, Mr. Courtney. Could we put it to the vote now?"
Sean watched Hradsky's hand go up against him. He didn't want to look at Duff. He didn't want to see him vote with Hradsky, but he forced himself to turn his head. Duff's hands were on the table in front of him. He blew another smoke ring and watched it hit the tabletop.
"Those in favour of the motion?" asked Max,
and Duff and Sean raised their hands together. Sean realized then how much it would have meant if Duff had voted against him. Duff winked at him, and he couldn't help grinning.
"That is 30 votes for and 60 against," declared Max. "Therefore, Mr. Courtney's motion falls to the ground. I will inform the Mine Workers Union of the decision. Now, is there any other business before we close the meeting?"
Sean walked with Duff back to his own office.
"The only reason I supported you was because I knew Hradsky would win anyway," said Duff pleasantly.
Sean snorted.
"He's right, of course," Duff went on, unperturbed, as he held open the door to Sean's office. "A 10% wage increase would jump the group working costs up $10,000 a month."
Sean kicked the door closed behind them and didn't answer.
"For God's sake, Sean, don't carry this goodwill towards men attitude to absurdity. Hradsky's right. Kruger is likely to slap another one of his taxes on us at any moment, and we've got to finance all that new development on the East Rand. We can't let production costs creep up now."
"All right," gruffed Sean. "It's all settled. Just hope we don't have a strike on our hands."
"There are ways of dealing with strikes. Hradsky's got the police on our side. We can have a couple of hundred men up from Kimberley in no time at all," Duff told him. "Damn it, Duff, it's wrong. You know it's wrong. That grotesque Buddha with the little eyes knows it's wrong. But what can I do? Damn it, what can I do?" Sean exploded. "I feel so bloody helpless."
"Well, you're the one who wanted to give him control."
Duff laughed at him.
"Stop trying to change the world and let's go home."
Max was waiting for them in the outer office. He looked nervous.
"Excuse me, gentlemen, could I have a word with you?"
"Who's talking?" Sean asked abruptly. "You or Hradsky?"
"It's a private matter, Mr. Courtney."
Max dropped his voice.
"Can't it wait till tomorrow?"
Sean pushed past him and kept going for the door.
"Please, Mr. Courtney, it's of the utmost importance."
Max plucked desperately at Sean's arm.
"What is it, Max?" Duff asked.
"I have to speak to you alone."
Max dropped his voice again and glanced unhappily at the street door.
"Well, speak then," Duff encouraged him. "We're alone now."
"Not here. Can you meet me later?"
Duff raised an eyebrow.
"What is this, Maximilian? Don't tell me you're selling dirty pictures."
"Mr. Hradsky is waiting for me at the hotel. I told him I was coming to find some papers. He'll get suspicious if I don't go back immediately."
Max was nearly in tears. His Adam's apple played hide-and-seek behind his high collar, bobbing out and disappearing again. Duff was suddenly very interested in what Max had to say.
"You don't want Norman to know about this?" he asked.
My goodness, no.
Max came closer to tears.
When do you want to meet us?
Tonight, after 10 o'clock, when Mr. Horadsky has retired.
Where? Asked Duff.
There's a side road round the east end of the Little Sister mine dump. It's not used any more.
I know it, said Duff. We'll ride along there about 10:30.
Thank you, Mr. Charleywood. You won't regret it.
Max scampered for the door and disappeared.
Duff adjusted his beaver at the correct angle. Then he prodded Sean in the belly with the point of his cane. Smell it. Suck it in.
Duff sniffed appreciatively, and Sean did the same.
I don't smell a thing, Sean declared.
The air is thick with it, Duff told him. The sweet smell of treachery.
They left Xanadu just after 9:30. Duff insisted on wearing a black opera cloak.
Atmosphere is vital, laddie. You can't go to a rendezvous like this dressed in dirty khaki pants and Weltanschauung. It would ruin the whole thing.
Well, I'm damned if I'm going to get into fancy dress. There's a very good suit. It'll have to do.
Can't I persuade you to wear a pistol in your belt? Asked Duff wistfully.
No, laughed Sean.
No, Duff shook his head. You're a barbarian, laddie. No taste, that's your trouble.
They avoided the main streets on their way through Johannesburg and met the Cape Road 1/2 mile beyond the town. There was only a minute slice of moon left in the dark bowl of the sky. The stars, however, were big, and by their light the white mine dumps, each the size of a large hill, stood out like pustules on the earth's face. Despite himself, Sean felt a little breathless with excitement. Duff's zest was always infectious. They cantered with their stirrups almost touching, Duff's cloak billowing out behind him, and the breeze of their passage fanning the tip of Sean's cigar to a fierce red spark.
Slow down, Duff. The turning's just about here somewhere. It's overgrown, we'll miss it.
They reined to a walk.
What's the time? Asked Duff.
Sean drew on his cigar and held his watch close to the glow.
9:45. We're early. My bet is Maximilian will be there before us. Here's the road.
Duff turned his horse onto it, and Sean followed him. The Little Sister mine dump rose up next to them, steep and white in the starlight. They skirted it, but its bulk threw a shadow over them. Duff's horse snorted and shied, and Sean gripped with his knees as his own horse danced sideways. Max had stepped out from a scraggy cluster of bushes next to the road.
"Well met by moonlight, Maximilian," Duff greeted him.
"Please bring your horses off the road, gentlemen."
Max was still showing signs of the afternoon's agitation. They tied their horses next to Max's among the bushes and walked across to join him.
"Well, Max, what's new? How are the folks?" Duff asked.
"Before we go any further in this matter, I want you gentlemen to give me your word of honour that whether anything comes of it or not, you will never say a word to anybody of what I tell you tonight."
Max was very pale, Sean thought, or perhaps it was just the starlight.
"I agree to that," said Sean. "Cross my heart," said Duff.
Max opened the front of his coat and brought out a long envelope.
"I think if I show you these first, it will make it easier to explain my proposition."
Sean took the envelope from him.
"What are they, Max?"
"The latest statements from all 4 banks at which Mr. Horadsky deals."
"Matches, Sean, give us light, laddie," said Duff eagerly.
"I have a lantern with me," Max said, and he squatted down to light it.
Sean and Duff squatted with him and spread the bank statements in the circle of yellow light. They examined them in silence until at last Sean rocked back on his heels and lit another cigar. "Well, I'm glad I don't owe that much money," Sean announced. Sean folded up the sheets and put them back in the envelope. He slapped the envelope into the palm of his free hand and started chuckling. Max reached across, took it from him, and placed it carefully back inside his coat. "All right, Max. Spell it out for us," said Sean. Max leaned forward and blew out the lantern. What he had to say was easier said in darkness.
"The large cash payment that Mr. Heradsky had to make to you, gentlemen, and the limitation of output from his diamond mines in terms of the new cartel agreements in the diamond industry have forced him to borrow heavily on all his banks."
Max stopped and cleared his throat.
"The extent of this borrowing you have seen. Of course, the banks demanded security for the loans, and Mr. Heradsky has given them his entire holding of CRC shares. The banks have set a limit on the shares of 35 shillings each. As you know, CRCs are currently quoted at 90 shillings, which leaves a wide margin of safety. However, if the shares were to suffer a setback and fall in price to 35 shillings, the banks would sell. They would dump every single share that Mr. Heradsky owns in CRCs onto the market."
"Go on, Max," said Duff. "I'm beginning to like the sound of your voice."
"It occurred to me that if Mr. Heradsky were temporarily absent from Johannesburg, and say if he went on a trip to England to buy new machinery or something of that nature, it would be possible for you gentlemen to force the price of CRCs down to 35 shillings. Done correctly, it would only take 3 or 4 days to accomplish. You could sell short and start rumours that the Leader Reef had pinched out at depth. Mr. Heradsky would not be here to defend his interests, and as soon as CRCs hit 35 shillings, the banks would offload his shares. The price would crash, and you, with ready cash available, would be in a position to buy up CRC shares at a fraction of their actual value. There is no reason why you shouldn't gain control of the group and make a couple of million to boot."
There was a silence. It lasted a long time before Sean asked,
"What do you get out of it, Max?"
"Your check for £100,000, Mr. Courtney."
"Wages are going up," remarked Sean. "I thought the standard pay for this type of work was 30 pieces of silver. The rate, I believe, was set by a countryman of yours."
"Shut up," snapped Duff.
Then, more pleasantly to Max, "Mr. Courtney likes his little jokes. Tell me, Max, is that all you want, just the money? I'll be frank with you, it doesn't ring true. You must be a moderately rich man as it is."
Max stood up quickly and started towards the horses. He hadn't reached them before he swung round. His face was in darkness, but his voice was naked as he screamed at them.
"Do you think I don't know what they call me? The court jester? Heradsky's tongue? Lickass? Do you think I like it? Do you think I enjoy crawling to him every minute of every day? I want to be free again. I want to be a man again."
His voice choked off, and his hands came up and covered his face. He was sobbing. Sean couldn't watch him, and even Duff looked down at the ground in embarrassment. When Max spoke again, it was in his usual soft and sad voice.
"Mr. Courtney, if you wear your yellow waistcoat to the office tomorrow, I will take it as a sign that you intend to follow my suggestion, and that my terms are acceptable to you. I will then make the necessary arrangements to ensure Mr. Heradsky's absence from the country."
He untied his horse, mounted, and rode away down the track towards the Cape Road. Neither Sean nor Duff moved to stand up. They listened to the hoofbeats of Max's horse fade into the darkness before Duff spoke. Those bank statements were genuine. I had a good look at the seals. And even more genuine was Max's emotion. Sean flicked his cigar away into the bushes. No one could act that well. Made me feel quite sick listening to him. Hell, how can a man so cold-bloodedly betray his trust? Laddie, let's not turn this into a discussion of Max's morals. Let's concern ourselves with the facts. Norman has been delivered into our hands, neatly trussed, spiced with garlic and with a sprig of parsley behind each ear. I say let's cook him and eat him. Sean smiled at him. Give me a few good reasons. I want you to convince me. The way I feel towards him after that meeting this afternoon, I shouldn't be surprised if I convince easily. One, Duff held up a finger. Norman deserves it. Sean nodded. Two, another of Duff's fingers came up. If we gain control, we can run things the way we want. You can indulge your good resolution and give everybody a pay rise, and I'll be top man again. Yes, Sean tugged at his moustache thoughtfully. Three, we came here to make money. We'll never get another opportunity like this. And my last reason, but the most potent. You look so beautiful in that yellow waistcoat, laddie. I wouldn't miss seeing you in it tomorrow morning, not for 1,000 CRC shares. It is rather natty, admitted Sean. But listen, Duff, I don't want another locked camper business. Messy, you know? Duff stood up. Norman's a big boy, he wouldn't do that. Anyway, he'd still be rich. He's got his diamond mines. We'd only be relieving him of his responsibilities on the Witwatersrand. They walked across to the horses. Sean had his foot in the stirrup when he stiffened and exclaimed, My God, I can't do it. It's all off. Why? Duff was alarmed. I spilled gravy on that waistcoat. I couldn't possibly wear it tomorrow. My tailor would murder me.